I'm not that worried.
Hey, everybody. Rich, what's 49 plus 1?
It's 50. It's a trick.
That's right. Nope, no tricks here. It's the 50th podcast episode.
Tricks are for kids.
Let's just do it again. It's like, roll it back.
From the top.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Gecko's Gamescast. It's episode 50. That means Rich and I have been doing this for... I'm just going to round up and say a year.
It's been over a year.
I'm just going to round down and say a year.
Remember, there's name changes. There's episode counts restart.
Yes, sir.
We can't forget season zero.
We cannot forget season zero. The lost episodes, some would say. Excuse me for just
despite
a moment.
The fact that they're readily available.
I'm going to turn off my AC for a second.
Yeah, I just remembered to do that as we were starting.
Okay, I'm back. They're memorable in my heart and in my mind.
Yeah.
And
I love season zero. It's the best season of Yu-Gi-Oh!
I think you're going to be able to hear my little AC in the background for a little bit. I had to get a little
Same.
It's hot out today.
Same with mine. It's a hot one. I think I'm going to go in the pool and have a beer after this.
Just remember to drink responsibly and don't like tip over.
So definitely
floaty.
Like be like, oh no, I'm out of beer. I need to go to the store.
I think there's something to be said to just go in the pool on a floaty and just relax. Whoever made those cup holder floaty tubes, God bless. That's really key.
I don't know where the fuck it literally, I think it came with like a 12 pack, which tells you so much about the industry.
The floaty?
No, hear me out. It's a small floaty, not for a person. I have a Leinen Kugel's branded floaty that just holds like 6 beers.
And it came with the 12 pack?
Yeah.
Wow.
Like it's a little boat that floats in the water and has like 6 cup holders in it.
Does it come with a like a little claw thing that you could use to grab it? What if it floats away? What if you're like my beer?
You gotta paddle over to it.
You gotta do the work and drink. That's fine.
If we go away this weekend to somewhere with water, I'll bring it.
Oh, can't wait. But hey, everybody, hope you're staying safe out there and being responsible. Rich and I usually just want to talk about some games from the past week. Rich beat The Last of Us.
I did. I also beat another game we'll talk
about.
Oh,
yeah. About. Yeah, and I also played a pretty decent game that you brought me aware of. You made me aware that this is not new, but certainly not old.
Yeah, it's... Yeah, I think it's just suddenly in the zeitgeist, so to speak. But I figured before we really kick it off, we should probably just get out of the way. In this industry, this week has been sort of fucking crazy. In terms of allegations of sexual misconduct and just misconduct in general amongst employees at game companies, at places like Ubisoft, at places like IGN, so basically every side of the games industry. And I think we just wanted to kind of get out in front of it and be like, we don't have enough experience with the misgivings to really comment in an educated way on it, I guess I should say. Obviously, we encourage anyone to speak out who has to deal with that sort of bullshit, because it's insane that we live in a world where this sort of stuff is still happening. And it didn't feel right to keep going without talking about it at all.
Yeah, I definitely didn't want to carry on and be like, video games are great, and just ignore something that's blatantly going on outside the house, so to speak. So
because sometimes they're terrible.
They are. Sometimes things are terrible, and it just helps to know that, you know, Rich and I see you, we hear you, and we believe you. And it's something that we can only hope over time changes for the better, both in this industry and others. And just continue pressing on and trying to really hold others accountable for their actions. That was a good point. But other than that, though, I did want to just hear about what you thought overall about The Last of Us. I am not done with it yet. I promised myself I would be, and then I didn't. But I'm close, I feel.
Yeah, you're close. Like you got really a few more hours there to go, but you're close.
But for you, would you give it the yay or nay? For the story,
I'd give it a yay.
Good.
I think there are some bits that feel like they're bashing you over the head a little bit, in a way that kind of gets under my skin at times. But overall, I do think the story they're trying to tell shines through at the right parts. The bulk of that for me hinges on the character performance. Ashley Johnson, Laura Bailey, Troy Baker, all phenomenal fucking performances. Those are just the three, you know, big names you hear bandied about that I wanted to mention, because I really do think the story lives and dies on their performances. The gameplay, which you and I talked about a little bit, I think also shines through because it's such a cut above what the first game was.
Yeah, I think it makes such a difference compared to the first game's gameplay that I noticed it immediately. Number one, number two, had such a great time with it. There's just so many small improvements, but also large improvements that I just really appreciated while playing, and I still continue to. And I think that if we're talking about like what makes the game great, I do think that the gameplay shouldn't be downplayed, at least as I saw it was from the first one. So that was a good one.
Yeah, for sure. As like, you know, what's kind of crazy is like I thought about like back to the first one, the entirety of the game, like, I couldn't wait to kind of brush through certain sequences just to get back to the story. And while I still enjoyed the story in this one, I found myself more often than not itching to get to the next encounter.
Yeah, for sure. And that was something I noticed too. A lot of the first one, I felt exactly the same. I really just wanted to go, you know, get past who I need to get past, sneak by who I need to sneak by, and just get to the next segment. And that's also mainly just because, at least when I was playing it, the gameplay really, it was okay, but it wasn't anything to gawk over, and it certainly wasn't anything where I just stopped and went, wow, this is, I'm having so much fun. It really just was kind of a very simple third-person shoot and stealth kill kind of game. I mean, if I'm being quite honest with myself, I would even think games like Splinter Cell, I even had a better time with a stealth game like that because it was just built on that kind of thing. But in 2, I can only think of maybe 2 segments that I blatantly skipped on purpose to rush through because I was getting a little impatient with the chapter length. But the rest of it, I actually enjoyed it, and I took my time to really just go through it and try to, I think, just challenge myself also to see if I could do something without getting caught, for example. Or even sneak by an entire group just to see if I can do it without getting caught again and not having to kill anybody. And I like how the game offers those options. It's not something that I find myself doing all the time. As I'll always say, and I said last episode, I think, if I'm stacked, like, with a bunch of items, I'm going to want to use them. Like, what's the point of me even going through and crafting anything if I'm not going to use it?
I'm going to drop some mines, and then I'm going to start picking people off with the bow.
Yeah.
And I think we talked about this a little bit last time, how, like, weirdly gratifying it was, almost, in a sense, because, and especially having the full perspective now of how hard they want you to be, like, you should feel bad about what you're doing. And I just kind of roll my eyes at it, in a sense, because, like, there's, I mentioned, like, putting down, like, explosive mines, and then I'm like, there's something that just made me kind of, like, giggle to myself when I'm walking around, and all of a sudden I hear an explosion, and then I just hear, Gary!
Yeah, it's like some Scooby-Doo-style trap, or, like, some Home Alone thing where you make it out of, like, a water bottle or a shaving cream can, and you're just like, yeah, this is gonna explode.
And they're like, they got Mikey!
Yeah, and it's even better with the cult faction, the Scars, when they're all, I'm telling you, when they're all just whistling, you just hear a very large explosion, you just hear the loudest, it just says urgent whistling on the subtitles. I would pause it at certain times, and I would just start laughing hysterically, because some of them were high pitch whistles, some or whatever. There is a subtitle though for urgent whistling or something like that, and I'd be like, ah, shit, like, I know I'm caught at this point. So I had a good time with that one too.
That always reminds me of it's like the funniest joke in the world, because I think even the cast of the show makes fun of it at this point. There's an episode, like a late series episode of Scrubs, where they're in SeaWorld and one of the subtitles reads "Rides Dolphin Forlornly."
I love a good subtitle like that. But in your experience too, so that you've experienced from start to finish, do you think that you had more problems with the story than you would have thought? Do you think that really you kind of only had minor problems in scope, and the larger misgivings were dwindling over time by the end? Like, did you actually feel completely satisfied with the ending?
I did. My larger misgivings are with pacing, and we talked about that last time.
Yeah.
That I think it ends up feeling like 2, and in some cases 3, distinct different games.
Mm-hmm.
And that even comes into what you want to call the ending, because, and we can talk about this more than when you're actually done, I think the last 2 or 3 hours feel like the beginning of a third game.
Kind
of
like a prequel, almost?
It's labeled in the story as the epilogue, but even still, like, I think there's a part three on the table, and that bit feels like the beginning of a part three more so than the end of a part two.
I can agree with that. I think that one thing I admire Naughty Dog storytelling for doing is that they truly just do what they want to do, and they don't give a fuck about, you know, whether something should fit perfectly into this puzzle. And I give the I agree that the pacing is a little wonky, and I still agree with that.
There's a particularly big choice where I think the pacing suffers greatly for that choice, and I tried to let the jury be out because I said, well, let me get to the end. Maybe there's something that happens in the last act or the last chapter that, like, really draws into you. No, there's a specific reason we needed to tell it this way. That's not the case.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like I didn't hit a point in that either just yet. I really feel like by the time you hit to the halfway point, you get to a second storyline, you're not... I feel like everybody's going to have that same kind of head tilt expression where they'll say, oh, okay. And that's not against the character or anything, or the story that follows, but you truly are kind of left in this deflated state where you'll wonder or be left wondering, why didn't they show this at the beginning? Because I feel like it would have kind of made more sense from a story narration standpoint.
You'd have more perspective, if anything. Yeah. And, I mean, my major stance is that these games should have been two games at $30 a piece called The Last of Us 2 Red and Blue Version.
pick your character and let it just happen at the end. And then they'll spin it off for gold and silver right there, too.
Yeah, then Omega. Then you'll get your Omega yellow version. Red. you get your Joel version.
But there was a... I'll spoil this part. If you don't like it, I would say hit this. What are we at, 12 minutes right now? Skip to 15 minutes. I'm going to challenge myself. I think that the reveal that Abby's father was the doctor or surgeon that was operating on Ellie, I think that was something that could have been addressed at the beginning of the game. Because I actually think the game should have led with that. With something that's kind of a completely new introduction to somebody that you're not really sure of who it is just yet. You get introduced to this character, Abby, and you're thinking, oh, well, who's this? And then you see that, because I believe that after Abby had killed Joel and her group so horrifically right from the outset, you're not really looking for a reason to like the character. You're not looking for it because it's set up
given
that she's
to
bad.
You earlier on, yeah. Like, and I feel like a lot of people had more trouble with that than I did. But even still, one of the things that I was thinking of was they really harp on that dream sequence, like where she keeps having the dream where she goes into the hospital room. When we're first introduced to her character, that's what they should have opened with.
Yeah.
We should have done that dream sequence and then cut to her waking up and seeing Owen standing by the window.
Yep, and that would have been A-okay. And then progressively over time, leading up to that scene, I would even say you can have that scene of her father being killed juxtaposed against the cutscene of her beating Joel and shooting it. It would have been fine. And I truly believe that they could have just picked and choosed a little bit better in terms of telling the story so that you're not feeling at the point of when Abby's story takes over that you have to like her or have to now learn to empathize with the Wolves group story point and her gang story point. It's just a natural kind of flow. And you're not feeling like you're being forced into one... You're not being forced into one train of thought where you're now thinking, oh, I now have to kind of see how the other half lives. I need to understand now or force myself to understand that aside from what she's done,
to put yourself in their shoes.
She's a good person. Yeah. So I think that forcing the player to kind of take that and roll with it, I think that's a little bit disingenuous sometimes in terms of the storytelling. I still don't like it too much, even though I really enjoy Abby as a character. And that's why I'm actually a little rugged on the top. It's because I want to enjoy Abby as the character, but the way that they presented it so far, it's just very tough to justify it for me. I'm like,
I think it gets better the further she gets separated from all that stuff, and all, like, because again, the parts of the story that hit you over the head too hard for me are the bits where they're just like, revenge is bad, don't you see what this is doing to you, don't you understand? And I'm like, yes, settle down.
Yep, exactly. And we hit 15 minutes, so I'm gonna do it. No, yeah, spoilers, perfect. You made it.
No spoilers.
Revenge is bad. And that's not a real big spoiler.
That's the takeaway.
But I do give them credit for trying to just do what they want to do, regardless of the editing, because I can totally see them, and they have just said, listen, you know, we've probably gone through this millions of times, and we just think it makes sense this way. So give them props for doing that.
And I think it works more often than it doesn't.
Yeah, I would say that other than pacing, my biggest gripe with the game that I think will continue onward up until I finish it, and even then some, is I don't really enjoy narrated games where you kind of arrive at the conclusion well before the game kind of gets there with you, or arrives at that conclusion as well with its characters.
Especially 12 hours before.
Precisely, yeah. And it's almost like you're watching a television show and you already know at this point, because the writing is leading you into a certain direction as to what's going to happen, and you're kind of still just strapped in with the characters for them to go through that realization themselves. And if it was something that was an hour before or something, that'd be a little bit different. But as you just said, you're discovering this maybe like 12 hours off early. And you're kind of watching this unfold, not in an enjoyable way, but more so in a way where you're thinking, when are we finally going to get to the character's realization that this is bad? Or that revenge is not the way. And by the time I bet I will get to that point, it's going to be at the very end, and I'm just kind of being impatient right now, thinking, oh, like, I could just get to the point. I just want to see it.
Yeah, where's the chase and cut to it?
Yeah, it's like trying to shove a square peg into the round hole currently, where they're thinking, why is this happening? And you're just like, because I know what's going on. It's like, just think about it.
Listen, if all I could say is, let's draw attention to the biggest problem with the game. To quote a wonderful tweet from 9Volt yesterday, the biggest plot hole in The Last of Us 2 is that a woman who is a soldier in the zombie apocalypse would be buff with big muscles. Just doesn't make sense to me.
Oh, let me tell you, I think that was hilarious, and also, I still think that it's continued to be discussed and debated on is even more hilarious by people.
And, for the most part, discussed and debated on with completely incorrect information.
I've seen just straight-up snippets. This is why social media and Twitter is just a mistake. You really just shouldn't even go. There are people who have written, I have never seen a woman like this, and they do not exist in the real world. Just plain write it like that. Just leave it out in the open like that. I have never seen. It's like, okay. Okay, that's fine, but I can guarantee you they do exist. They are out there.
And also, let me tell you something. You're going to be okay.
Yeah, this isn't the worst
thing. This is
going to
have no bearing on your life in any way, shape, or form.
And this is actually speaking from a person who, when I first got introduced to the character with no backstory, I thought she was ripped as fuck. And I even had a double take on her model because she was jacked. And I was thinking, man.
The first time you see her, you could tell, like, she's literally, like, at one point, I think Tommy even describes her in the story as built like an ox.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, she's
insane.
Which led me to the revelation, you know, she has this trauma years prior, and I guess she's just been doing pull-ups ever since.
I think that my mindset was almost in the same way, not in such an extreme fashion, to say women like this don't exist. Her model just looked off, because I genuinely realized I'm not used to seeing a female character just so jacked like that.
But also, then when you get a look at her living situation and the type of lifestyle she lives, you're like, yeah, that makes complete
exactly.
sense.
Exactly. Yep. And that's exactly what I was going to say. The very first thing I was trying to tell myself was, well, this kind of looks a little weird, because how is she maintaining this jacked body? And then she literally wakes up in the stadium next to a gym with a complete livestock farm and nutrients
you go
and calories
and,
a regimen, and she's driven
by
revenge.
They have a butcher.
Revenge.
Like, yeah.
It's like, this is a classic, I am going to get jacked to take revenge kind of story, and it's tied into her own personality, her own insecurities. It's a whole thing.
And she has
thing.
The resources to be that.
Yeah, it kind of weaves itself into her character and her state of being. She is so muscular because she has a reason to be deep down. She wants to be powerful. So completely okay at that point, but you still see people saying, oh no, it's like, I do not like the way that this looks, and I'm like, well, I'm sorry. Overall, I think that the game has a lot of strength in itself. I think over time it just continues to surprise me and also just actually take me aback as to how beautiful the game is presented. And there are times where I was even telling you last night, there were several times where I thought the game's probably going to end here. And then it just doesn't.
Yeah, there's a few moments like that. And then, like you said, the idea of, like, these gorgeous environments, and I think there's a few moments that just feel, like, purely, like, pulse-pounding in sense of, like, introducing new elements of this world which we're starting to refamiliarize ourselves with. Like, I think I might have texted you after this one. The first time you encounter the Scars, the Seraphim, you're, like, going through the woods, and you kind of pull yourself up on a ledge, and you just hear one of those, like, whistles, like, the deep, like... And then you just get, like, pegged with a fucking arrow, and it's like, Jesus, what the hell is happening?
Yeah, and even if it is a scripted event, or even if it's something that should happen, I'm just impressed with it all the same. I really am. For anybody listening who's wondering or has never had any interest in The Last of Us, or you still don't, I mean, you're never going to, you can't make a leopard change his spots here. I think I'm going to try. I would highly recommend, even if you don't own a PlayStation, to at least watch the story of The Last of Us. I think it's something that deserves to be seen. Regardless, I think if you like a good post-apocalyptic story to be told and you're wondering, should I even get into this? I truly think that you should at least just watch a Let's Play or something. If you're not into playing it yourself, I think the first story is excellent storytelling. I even think it's some of the best storytelling I've ever seen in a video game. And the second one, if you have no interest in playing that, I at least do recommend watching some of the story unfold, because you're going to get a lot of misinformation if you're ever curious about it by people who did not like the game. And if you go looking for that kind of info, you're going to fall under some confirmation bias, I'm sure, and you're going to think, maybe it's not so good. But I really think that your opinion will change after you've seen how the story kind of unfolds over time. It certainly did for me, because I started out thinking I'm not going to like the way that they've done this. And I found that, just like the characters, I'm kind of transforming my mindset into an experience where I'm thinking, oh, wow, this is actually really good in the way that they chose to structure the story here.
It's almost funny that when I see, like, critic bombs like that, it actually makes me want to play something more, because I think I'm going to enjoy it more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, everybody's so mad. I bet it's something dumb.
I'm going to keep enjoying it. It's like, I'm going to show them.
It actually reminds me of To This Day, which I think is my favorite Penny Arcade comic of all time. Around the time Punisher came out on Netflix, that week's Penny Arcade comic was like them talking, and he's like, hey, did you see Polygon's score of The Punisher? They gave it 1 star. They said it was absolute crap, and I feel like we need to go watch it immediately.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, it's like the reverse of the Nintendo seal of approval.
Because it's so true. There are certain reviews that you'll read in these review bombs that just, they're very unfounded. They don't have any logic or reasoning behind it other than I didn't like the way that it was presented. And I think even some reviews that were pretty in the red too also displayed that kind of mindset as well. There's even one time, there was a review, and I don't try to look all of them up so frequently. I usually just like to play something I'm remotely interested in and see where it goes from there. But there's this one review, it was popularized at the time when this game was coming out, The Last of Us, because it was negative. And, you know, this was in the sea of the 10 out of 10s. So everyone loves to look for the negatives. It's scandalous. So in the video, though, the person who's even reviewing it, you know, he goes into this 20-minute vid that I didn't even bother watching all of it. But about halfway through, I think there was a point where he said, the gameplay isn't fun. And then he immediately adds on to that by saying, this is speaking from someone who thought that The Last of Us 1 had a terrible gameplay system and did not enjoy it at all. And I was thinking, like, well, then of course you're not going to, you're not going to like it. Like, it's not like it's going to, they're going to slap on a new system and you're going to magically go, oh, wow, this is it.
And in fact, I don't understand why you're the one reviewing this game at that point.
Yeah. I've even read reviews at times where people will be reviewing a game. Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze. I'm going to be so deep. GameStop reviewed this and said it was too hard. And this was actually, I believe, reviewed by somebody who just says, hey, you know, I play platformers in my day, but this game's just really hard. I'm not enjoying it, whatever. And that's his opinion on it. Everybody took this as gospel, though. You're going to get a wide variety of people that will boil down to, this is my opinion on it, and I don't really like it. But you can't change the story for what it is just because you don't like it. It's still a very tightly told story. That doesn't really have too many plot holes as much as people wanted it to. I found that there were a lot of people saying that there were plot holes because X character behaved in a certain way, but
that's not a plot hole. That's you saying, I don't think that character would do that, and the people who wrote the character going, well, we disagree, and we made the character.
Right, it's like character A does this. Everybody goes, they would never say that. And they go, well, I made it. And I say, they did. I say, he had a change of heart, and he decided to say it now.
It's been a while since we've seen him. You know, he's been through a lot. And he said it. He said that he thinks Inception's overrated.
Yeah. So, I'm going to beat it, though. I really enjoy what I have. I still give it the 9 out of 10 that I think it deserves if I had to give it a review score that I don't enjoy giving.
And I will say there's heavy use of flashbacks, and I think those are some of the best sections of the game, narrative-wise.
There's still one flashback where I believe you would even agree with this that is my favorite. I will say it when I beat the game, but...
Is it the museum?
Yes.
That's
Night at the Museum with Ben Stiller.
Literally, I remember, I think I might have talked to you, literally, like, I remember thinking some of the dialogue choices in that, I'm like, that's literally something I would say. Like, at one point, Ellie sees this giant T-Rex statue, and she goes, that's a big boy.
Yeah, that's a big boy right there. That's the best part. But, aside from The Last of Us, we also played other games, and I definitely want you to take the stage and talk about this game, because you texted me about it, Rich texted me about this game yesterday, he says he got it as a recommendation. He literally said, the first thing you should do, go on Google Images and just look it up. And I legitimately texted back right after doing that. I said, the fuck is this? And he just laughed.
And then short story is I basically beat this game. Eric, myself, a few of our other friends were on, in a Discord chat till like 4 a.m. Where I was fighting the last boss and live streaming it while people were watching. Live streaming it, on the Discord, not on Twitch or anything like that. So the game is Hylix. And the reason I picked it up is I got it as a recommendation. It's $1.50 on Steam right now, and the sequel just dropped, which I intend to get to now. The sell I got on it was pitched to me as 3 a.m. the game. It is... It's a JRPG, a turn-based, like, old-school style turn-based RPG, but the art and the music are, like, this surrealist nonsense. You play as Wayne, who is this horn-headed, like, demon man, and it's a weird, claymated, like, surrealist art world. Like, it looks like the inside pamphlet to a Pink Floyd album. It plays really well. That's the thing that's crazy. And there's, like, weird mechanics built around. You can't properly level up until you die. Like, dying is a mechanic. Mm-hmm. You go to the underworld when you die, and you can then turn in the flesh from enemies you've killed to increase your own health.
And they call it flesh points, right? Instead of hit points.
Yeah, you have flesh points and will points.
How's the music of the game again?
It's just weird, like, almost... like indie rockish at points, but everything's so heavily distorted. And if you look at some of the, when you're in combat, if you look at some of the imagery, like behind you at some points will just be like random shapes, like you're looking at some realist painting, and then another situation it'll be like a filter over a picture of a parking lot. Like, it's just, I encourage anyone to look up screenshots of this, and just, it's fascinating. It cost $1.50. I can't speak to the second one because I haven't started it yet. The first one takes about 3.5 hours to beat.
And that's not, I mean, that's not long at all. It just sounded like, so when I was watching the stream yesterday when you were just sharing it, I was, immediately just from the walking animation, I was just telling myself, I'm like, I know exactly what kind of game this is. I'm like, I can't do this. It's just such a strange kind of game that looked like something that came out of the band Primus, where they're just like, yeah, you know, this is a game that just came out of here, and here you go. And it's just weird this music and weird characters.
This game is actually Primus's new album.
Frankly, I wouldn't even be surprised. I was immediately thinking, just from the claymation itself, that it just looked like a Primus album cover, and I was just like, this is weird, and the music was just odd, but was the story good?
The story is weird, and, like, you never really get... My favorite bit of it, and it's a really short game. I don't care that I'm spoiling it, I guess. the last boss is Gibby the Moon King. You need to get a rocket ship key and fly to the moon to fight him. And when you beat him, he literally just goes, you've bested me, Wayne. I'm sorry for how I treated you.
Goodbye.
You can go, once you have your airship, because yes, there's an airship, you can go to this concert venue, and apparently you're in a band, like you and all the party members, and you can just play the guitar on stage, and there's a crowd of people that just, like, a crowd of Gumby people just freaking out. I kind of love, some of the writing is very weird, and you unlock new spells by watching TV. There are TVs throughout the world, and every TV you interact with grants you a new power. It's so fucking weird. Some of the item descriptions are fantastic. Like, I think your starting weapon is a pistol, and it's like a polished, shiny pistol. No bullets, though.
No bullets, sorry. Can't have it. I was, just seeing, I think the naming conventions of some of the items, that you were just buying, I think one of them was a candy or soda or something? Like, I don't know what it was called,
there was,
fruit punch?
There was juice box. Restores your will. Yeah, the juice boxes restore your will, and then your main health advent is burritos. But the thing that's fascinating about burritos is they serve two purposes. You go into the mini mart and you buy frozen burritos, and there's a microwave at the back of the store that you can use to turn them into warm burritos. Warm burritos you use on collapsed allies, and it revives them with half health, whereas frozen burritos can be used as a projectile to throw at enemies.
It's so strange. It's just so strange. I have to give the game credit, though. This is one of those things that you'd probably play, and you'd really never forget.
Yeah,
at least
no,
that's what I'm getting. It's like, you'll, even if it is like a 2 to 3 hour game, you could probably just say in the future, like, oh, I played a really weird-looking game one
weird
time.
Weird thing, yeah. It's worth the conversation. And it, like I said, it's normally like $4. It's $1.50 right now. The sequel just dropped. I believe the sequel is about $13. So I intend to play Hylix 2 as well, and I will talk to you more about.
Wait.
Did you see the death animation while you were watching?
No, what was it?
Okay, so every time you kill an enemy in the world, they just kind of melt into a pile of clay and bones and stay on the screen, like on the map. When you die, it goes into a superimposed close-up of Wayne's face, and his skin just melts off, and you just see bone.
That's so strange. Mason Lindrith, you know, whatever you're having, I'll have it, because...
We'll take some.
This is some weird shit, but I gotta give you props, because I truly have never seen something like this. This looks like from Spy Kids, Floops Flooglies or something. It looks like one of those kinds of games where they just took all the Flooglies or whatever you call them and they put them in the game. It just looks so strange. But it is unique. I can't deny it did make me want to play it. It is only 3 hours.
It stays with you.
I don't know if that's for better or for worse. It'll change the way you are.
Yeah, like I said, I needed to kill Gibby because I saw him every time I closed my eyes.
Yeah, and then you messaged us this morning saying, for those of you who stood up, I have slain Gibby.
The deed is done and the moon is safe.
Yeah, it was good. Is there anything else you even want to say about it? Anything else that would change the minds of anyone to play it?
Yeah, no, I think we've sold it as about as well as we can.
Okay.
So why don't you tell me about Project Winter?
Oh, for sure. So Project Winter was a game. Now, right now, the Steam Summer Sale is going on. So obviously, if you need any more excuses to fill your backlog, why not? I actually think that this is an interesting sale because there's no more dailies anymore. And I'm wondering if Steam's just going to do that from now on. Like, it's just a global across the board. Discount system.
Yeah, they changed it from even, I think last year is when they implemented that they weren't going to do dailies in the sense of, like, different things went on sale every day, but once they were on sale for the entire duration of the sale.
Ah, okay, well, that makes sense.
But like, this time they were just like, all right, everything's on sale now until it's over.
That makes sense. But Project Winter was there. I think it's about $13 when you can get it for like $15 for that and the DLC.
Yeah, I think it's $13.50 because I was looking at it after after we talked about it a little bit. I'm like, oh, if you guys are gonna like, I 100% play that.
Yeah, it is at its base level a social deduction game where you play as up to 8 people who are on this frozen or snowy mountain. I was about to really just get into the description there, as if I was writing a novel. You're on a snowy mountaintop or the snowy area of the world, and you're in this, like, this cabin with eight people. And your objective is to essentially repair radio towers that are around you by gathering materials and resources, and eventually call in a helicopter to save all of you from this place. All the while, it kind of mixes survival elements in there, where you have to keep your food and your warmth up, because obviously it's very cold out there. But all the while, at its foundation, it is a social deduction game, is that in that one of you is a traitor, and nobody knows who it is. So, very similar akin to the games like, say, Mafia, or Secret Hitler, or, what's the other one? It was Resistance. There are a few different roles in a game, meaning, you know, you may have somebody assume the role of what is called a soldier, and that means that around this, this snowy terrain, located in specific areas, there are different bunkers that you can actually loot for more resources, and there are special ones that only the soldier can get to. There's the scientists. The scientists can unlock the laboratory, which is also something that can be discovered on this map. I'm not sure about this just yet because I haven't played enough of it maybe, but I used to think that the layouts were procedurally generated. But I have played with people apparently who just seem like they knew what they were doing and they knew where to go. So I'm wondering, maybe there is a system to it as to how everything is laid out.
There might be some limits to it. Yeah. That it's easy to be like, oh, if this is here, then that means X is this way.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think I'll get it the more I play it. But the whole idea is that, you know, you are playing with a traitor and you can use voice chat. And you really, when the game starts, have no idea who
it's a proximity chat, right?
Yeah. That's the cool thing, too. Like, even minor things like that. Like, the game is in-game voice chat and it's based on proximity. So the further away you go, the further your voice will be heard, or the less likely your voice will be heard, just due to sheer distance. And eventually you won't be heard at all if you really go off the beaten path and just away from everybody. So whoever this traitor is, his goal is essentially to stop you guys from calling a helicopter to escape. Their goal is actually just to kill all of you. So they can sabotage certain objectives. They can poison food. They can access specific weaponry. They can build they can just do a lot. That you really have to be smart about doing away from the public eye. Because the second people start implicating you as a traitor, again, think of any other social deduction game you may be playing with your friends. It's going to be very hard to convince people that you're not a bad guy, especially if you are not. So the reason why I think it's just worth noting and kind of touching upon that is because I think if you're not a fan of social deduction games, I wouldn't get this game. That's literally what the game is built upon. So
there's other elements, but at its heart, that's what it is.
100%. And there are survival aspects of it, and there's resource management, all that. But yes, if somebody even tells you, oh, you're a traitor, and you have really no way to prove it, or you're just not good at lying in a game like that, or can't kind of keeping a straight face via voice chat, then it's going to be really hard to justify your purchase or even convince yourself that you're having fun. Because if you get killed immediately when the game starts, your game is kind of over. It's done. And you're either subjected to just watch people finish or leave the game. So I think this game, as all games, are played best with friends, because playing with strangers so far has had its benefits. But again, you may get some people who aren't very good at it, or ultimately kind of just BM the entire game. Like, if you're not a traitor, but you still behave in bad faith, I never understand that. It's almost, and we've played games like this, Rich, where, like, you play, like, a social deduction game, and then somebody in a group is acting against the best interest of the group, and then you find out they're a good guy at the end. It's like, what are you doing? Yeah. You're ruining everything.
Yeah, no, we have friends like that who baffle me.
Yeah, especially if they're just not getting their way, and that happens here, too. So I think it's a game that, first of all, I dig the art style. It's just this little cute 3D kind of thing. And I think there's a lot of aspects to the game that are just a lot of fun. It came out last year. I think it was May 2019. So it's been out for a while, but Rich was even telling me, yesterday, you know, for whatever reason, this has been picked up again in the public eye. And I'm wondering if it's because it went on sale. It is something I highly recommend to just check out.
I think
out
there
or
was
watch
also a recent update.
Oh, yeah, that was it too.
That also helped.
Yeah, good point.
But yeah, it's one of those things where, like, you made me want to pick it up, because I always think of one of my favorite things to do in those sort of social deduction games is when you are the quote-unquote bad guy, the best thing you can do for your interest is find somebody who kind of doesn't know what they're doing and, like, slowly convince everyone that they're the bad guy.
Oh, it's...
Like, there's nothing more gratifying than being like, me, look at this asshole.
Like, what about you? And they just go, what? And everyone goes,
and
yeah,
you get
what about
everybody
you?
Everybody to buy into it.
A really quick throwaway example is that I was a traitor one game, and I was very excited because I had never been a traitor yet. I've always been on the side of good. So it felt completely just, it felt scandalous and just absolutely fun to just act against the best interest of everybody while going on a voice chat and saying, hey guys, what do you need? How can I help you?
I'm here for you.
Yeah, I'm here for you. Let me help. I discovered these landmines, though, and eventually throughout the course of the game, there are these global events that take place, like a blizzard, and when the blizzard hits, everybody needs to get indoors to seek shelter in the main cabin, because the fireplace is there, you get warm. If you stay out in the blizzard, chances are your warmth is going to shoot right down to zero, and you're going to die. So everybody's going into this cabin, and everyone's kind of huddling in, and this is always the fun moments, too, because you know the traitor is in there with you at times. So right before I went in, I made sure I was kind of like the second to last person in. Nobody was around. Everybody was indoors. I put a landmine right outside of the cabin, like right at the entrance of the cabin, so that when everybody would walk out, it would just explode.
It would detonate, yeah.
And everybody just goes into a mass disarray and starts to shout, and it gets really funny. So I don't know why nobody hears me, but it succeeds. The blizzard blows over. I come indoors. You just hear a big and everybody starts freaking out, going, what the fuck, who did this, like, who's the traitor, blah, 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 and they start recanting recalling who was the last one to come in, and it just so
like,
happened,
yeah.
I was not the last person to go in, it happened to be this poor soul who had nothing to do with anything, and...
But he just happened to avoid the mine, and so now
he just went in, I don't even know how he did it, but... They were like, oh, it's this guy. And you could hear the desperation in this guy's voice going, it's not me. Like, it's not me. I have no reason to lie about this. Don't do this. And they just,
you're,
they completely
you're
just...
sitting there with your mic muted, like...
Yeah, and they just executed him. And I felt so bad. And even when you're dead, you become a ghost, so you can't really turn into anything. So he becomes a ghost, and he's following us around, and I eventually die because I get caught. And he just goes, oh, hey, Eric, who is the traitor? I go, oh, bro, that was me. And he just went, what? That's not cool. and it's just a really fun game for those kinds of things. But again, if you're not interested in interacting or even talking using your mic, don't bother. Because it's not going to be the game that you're going to derive enjoyment from.
You absolutely need it for that.
Yeah. I really, really enjoy a game where you get as much out of it as you put into it. And this is definitely one of those games.
This is a little more involved, I think, in the gameplay aspects of it. But there's also, and I would recommend it for anyone who likes these types of games, if you happen to have PSVR, there's a VR version of Werewolf.
Is there?
That Ubisoft put out. Yeah, it's pretty great because you have to go through like the things you need to do. But then every night in VR, you meet around the campfire. And everybody has, like, the villager appearance, but you see the people that you know what their roles are as what they really are around the campfire. So, like, if you happen to be one of the people that knows, you know, oh, X person is the witch, X person is the werewolf, you see them around the fire for what they truly are.
That's so funny. That's so funny. And then you're trying to explain to others, it's them! They're the werewolf! And they go, yeah, buddy, all right.
That's exactly what a werewolf would say.
But it's a lot of fun, though. I really enjoy those kinds of games, just because the camaraderie. And I'd recommend it. It's $13 if you're into that kind of thing. And get a couple of friends to do it, too. But it's fun. And Rich, if you get it, oh man. I'll throw you under the bus so hard.
Yeah, I probably will end up picking it up. I'll definitely play sometime this week.
For sure.
Because it seems pretty good. $13, I mean, come on.
Yeah, come on. It's a very well-made game. And just before we move on, this is by Other Ocean Group. They did make a pretty fun game. If they ever make a sequel, I'd be looking forward to it. It's just cool.
Project Fall. They go, I don't understand. Why don't we just walk down the mountain?
Yeah, let's just go. There's a trail here, guys. Let's go.
We got a short drop this week, so yeah. I'll move us through that quick. Biped comes to the Switch on July 2nd. Marvel's Iron Man VR comes to PSVR on July 3rd. The Wonderful 101 Remastered gets its Europe physical release on the PC, PS4, and Switch on July 3rd. And Castle Kong comes to Switch on July 4th.
I like the name of that, Castle Kong.
I feel like it's going to have, like, I understand, I think we both vibe with it for the same reason, and I feel like it would let us down in that regard.
I also just want to throw out that I did look up Circle of the Moon 2. Not Circle of the Moon 2, Curse of the Moon 2.
It's out July 10th.
Yep, on the eShop. I didn't find it on Steam, interestingly enough, or anything like that. It's not there. So I'm wondering I'm wondering if it's just going to stealth drop, because Steam, I think, at times just drops the game.
Yeah.
Without anything happening. So, they put it up since the last earlier this week. There you go, July 10th. Because I want to make sure I kind of had it all on one platform. But since you were so gracious in giving me my, what was that, a Christmas gift or a birthday gift that you got me the physical?
Birthday.
Oh,
birthday.
Such a good man. I'm going to look to get that too, and I'm pretty excited for that.
Cool, cool, cool.
Oh, yeah. So moving on here, I guess, with the news. We already talked about The Last of Us to death.
Yeah. We got another Cyberpunk preview.
It looks so good. It looks so good.
It's going to be fucking good. Like, I don't think anyone had qualms about that.
It looks so good. For anybody who is doubting, even a little bit, watch this video and become envious of your future self who is going to be able to play this game, because it just looks like a ton of fun, and the world looks so alive, and I'm so down to go in there. Yeah, I want to go to Night City so bad.
I really do. By the way, I think I might finally cave and get this. I have the original role-playing book, but it's so dense because it's from the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
They just put out a new version of the tabletop game.
Mm-hmm.
And the starter adventure it comes with is a prequel to the video game. And I'm really tempted to try and get a group together to play that.
Oh, for sure. And I am so down for that. I love... This is also why I'm just a big fan of, say, Judge Dredd. Just the kind of dystopian future type of game where things have not gotten better. They are just in the shitter.
It's like technology is insane, but like on the terms of like daily life, things are so much worse.
Yeah. Even in the Blade Runner universe, it's just gotten to a point where technology has advanced, but is so readily available to everybody that it's just become as common as anything else. And it really hasn't improved anything. It's just made people lazier. The world is still kind of devolving into this state where everyone's out for themselves. And it's just this whole broken mess. I'm so for it.
Did we talk about the weird factions that exist within the world of Cyberpunk and how excited I am and hoping that we see some of them?
No, talk about
them. Okay, so there's a lot of, like, in the lore of the tabletop game that's obviously been around for a very long time. The tabletop game Cyberpunk 2020.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things, like, just start looking up some of the gangs. My favorite one is there's a gang called the Kennedys, and it's a gang of people that have all gotten extreme plastic surgery to look like JFK.
I think that's so... It's so weird. Like, that's weird.
Yeah.
There's, like, certain factions that, even in, those are sometimes certain factions that I wish Fallout took the plunge to just be, like, embrace their full weird with. Like, the only one that I really can think of with Fallout is Children of the Atom.
Oh, yeah, that's full on, but immediately, like, thinking in that vein, I was thinking of, remember the New Vegas gang of Elvis impersonators?
Yeah, oh, I guess them too. You know what? Maybe I just should play New Vegas too. It's been so long. Yeah. Or even, they do have their share of weird ones, but I just like the certain aspect of, say, like, Cyberpunk or even just futuristic games where, yeah, like, they all get plastic surgery to look like JFK. It's like, that's just weird. And it's so readily available with the tech that they have in that universe that they can. So it's like, okay.
I'm going to send this your way when we're done. I had flagged this this PC Gamer article from like a year ago. That's just a list. It's like weird things from the Cyberpunk world we'd like to see in the video game. I'll have to send it your way. It's very fucking strange.
I can't wait. And this game just looks like it really just capitalizes into the deep storytelling of each and every faction that you're going to be dealing with just to make the game come alive. So if you haven't seen the preview, you should. I mean, I think it's like 20 minutes or so of preview, so you can just hop around. But I know that about the game, CD Projekt Red specifically said that they're going to make the game very narration-focused and very RPG-focused rather than making it seem like it's a first-person shooter as an RPG. They really want to drive home that this is a story-driven RPG with first-person shooter elements attached to it rather than the other way around. And that's the case.
I think that's the way they tried to drive it home from the beginning, where they were like, it's possible to get through this game without ever unholstering a weapon.
Yeah. And they even included some GTA elements too, with even just driving and stealing cars. And it just seems like the entire environment is not too linear. You really can just explore and just look at different people and do different things.
Allow me to, while I stayed on my weird gang thing, just read you this quick excerpt to give you a great example of gangs from the cyberpunk universe. The Philharmonic Vampires, for instance, are pranksters in black tuxedos who hate mimes with a passion and are at war with a gang of street performers called the Juilliard.
It's like, all right. And you just know that you can choose a side for those. It's like, okay. Because it's like, what possesses anybody to even join that? And they go, yeah, you know, you guys seem like you got it all together. What's going on? Yeah, like, no, I want to join.
I could definitely pick up what you're putting down.
I understand your points here. Let's do it. Where do we start? It's just that kind of shit that's just so fun to me. And their customization options, apparently, as everybody has heard, they are insanely vast. You could choose different skins. I still don't know how in-depth that is, but
we'll see. I hope you can pick much like the tabletop game, I hope one of your stats is still cool.
Yeah. Just the coolness factor.
I think people misinterpreted that. I don't think in the tabletop game, from what I've read, my understanding is that that's not necessarily supposed to be what the stat is, and that, like, on checks and stuff, it was more about, like, keeping your cool.
Oh, like being cool under pressure.
Yeah.
Rather than the put on shades, coolness factor, finger guns.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in my head I'm just going to do the put on shades, finger guns.
Well, it's like the mustache stat from the Mario RPGs.
Oh, yes, stash power. Oh, I love that. I used to, when I was younger and playing those games, I used to think that your stash would grow in volume the more points you put in. I was very disappointed to learn that.
Because it should.
Yeah. But yeah, that game looks fucking phenomenal. I don't even care that it's delayed months. As always, as long as workers aren't being abused and the game comes out and it's going to blow everybody away, that's going to be my game of the year for sure. I know it for a fact.
It looks so fucking good. Yeah,
you can, they don't even define your gender roles as male or female. They just say, here's a sandbox of anatomical things and you can just pick and choose what you want to be. Like, I don't even give a shit. No just male or female it, yeah. Here. Just here's the character. Mold it into whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. Which I think is the way to go.
I think it's just fun. It's just like a fun sandboxy type of game where you truly can be anybody you want in that Night City, baby. And Keanu Reeves' character is just as important as your own character. In fact, that they say in terms of story, he is kind of in second place for the most in-depth story other than yourself.
Johnny Silverhand.
Cannot wait. Literally. Silver has a silver arm. My name is Johnny Silver.
and he is an established character from the tabletop game. Like, people literally said he's like the Dritz Duerden of Cyberpunk.
Oh, I adore it. So definitely keep being on the lookout for that. I'm gonna get it for PC for sure. I'm gonna try maximize the graphical output of that game. It looks beautiful.
Totally.
But SpongeBob got released.
It did.
Finally.
Critically panned and loved by the consumer.
Yeah, critically panned, beloved by all. This was a weird one, because I played this game back in the day on the GameCube. I had fun.
Same here.
I'm not going to buy it again, but...
No.
For those who did, I don't know if it's nostalgia. There's even been people who've bought it without playing the previous game at all. They're like, this is a really impressive remaster. It's fun.
I think the thing that's probably worth noting is... Like, the way I've heard certain people talk about it, to me, it comes off as, like, a 3D platformer that was pretty good in a time where we weren't getting a lot of good 3D platformers. And I do think the, like, no, this is amazing take is a bit of a dose of nostalgia. And I think for games like that, outlets typically try and put people that aren't familiar with it or have no real reverence for it on the review just because... You want to see if it stands on its own, and maybe it doesn't, but, I mean, I haven't touched the remaster, so what the fuck do I know?
Yeah, I think what I had read was that it was getting critically panned. I don't know, critically sounds so intense. It just got panned because, mechanically, the game just wasn't that good still. There were just design choices that still weren't improved upon. It didn't make sense, so to your point, back in the day, it was more acceptable because, yeah, what did we have at that time to compare it to? But now where we have such a plethora of different 3D platformers, there are just certain gameplay elements that are just dated. So it probably was just graded as it would be today compared to how it used to be in the past. But everybody seems to be enjoying it. It's $30. That's the way it is. That's the way the cookie crumble. Go play SpongeBob. Avengers game had an extended preview for called the War Room, and they showcased the game. You know, it's
I think it's cool that the villain is MODOK.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure. I love when MODOK comes in any game at all. When he was in Marvel vs. Capcom, I was losing it because his character design is so absurd.
Yeah.
He was a bad guy in Ultimate Alliance at the time. The fact that he's one of the a main bad guy in this game too, it's absurd. I can't wait.
He is rumored to be the villain of Ant-Man 3.
I don't get me hyped like that. I'm fully expecting Marvel Phase 2, I guess, in this case, to just embrace the weird. I'm hoping they do.
The current rumor is that MODOK will be a secondary villain of Ant-Man 3, and then will reappear in the She-Hulk TV series.
I can't wait. Let it happen. I'm in.
Well, I just want to hear those words. I am MODOK.
That's it. Let it fade to black. He just announces himself. That's the game. What I've seen from the game so far, though, from this was that it is really just a more customizable beat-em-up, it looks like.
Yeah.
It's going to be a game I'm going to get on sale because I'm just not impressed with it at all. I think graphically it doesn't look that great. I'm not too privy about the voice. I don't care too much about the voice actors. I know some people were saying, I really don't like the voice. I don't care. It's just...
Yeah, that doesn't really do much for me.
There's just something about the Hulk punching somebody out and them just not dying immediately from a Hulk punch that just kind of rubs me the wrong way. Yeah, I don't know.
That Brooklyn Bridge scene, let's not mince words. All those people are dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's...
The thing to me is, I think it's so hard to, look at it. The thing is, after a game like Insomniac Spider-Man, where I'm like, you can do an awesome superhero game, this just looks mediocre.
It really does. This game, the only thing that it seems to kind of add into the mix is just the customization abilities to the characters and your heroes. There are different equipable pieces of items that you can put in. That's not going to make the game any better for me. The easiest example I'm thinking of was back when Darksiders 2 added customization into their game for Death. They made this whole customizable item system. At its core, though, it was still just Darksiders, and that's why I still enjoyed the game for what it was. The customization was kind of like this nice little icing on it. This does not look like, in this kind of game, that it's going to improve the overall presentation for me. No. It just looks like another aspect tacked on to an already mediocre beat-em-up where I'm going to think while playing it, I also have to make sure that my customization's up to snuff before fighting anybody.
Constantly, and
that
just seems in an inventory menu.
Yeah, and I'm just like, not for me. And also, I was watching a friend of ours was playing, they got a GameCube emulator the other day, and they were playing the Incredible Hulk game. This game actually reviewed well back in the day.
Ultimate Destruction?
Yeah. This game was great back in the day, but... The reason why it was great is because Hulk is in the city, and everybody he punches, when we're talking friend or foe, it doesn't matter, they go 50 yards, or 50 miles out. They just get vaulted. And that's exactly the kind of experience that I'm thinking from a Hulk, that I'm expecting from a game like the Hulk, from a character like the Hulk. Same thing with Thor. You're getting hit with an ancient weapon from Valhalla in space, and it has the power to command thunder. It's a mythological item, and you're beating up, I don't know, Hydra with it.
If we're dealing with MODOK, I believe it's AIM.
Yeah, it's like, okay. So there's just a few things that I'm okay with, that I'm kind of decent with. I still think that Ms. Marvel being in the game is pretty damn cool. I like that. You'll hear me talk about really that forever.
Cool. I hope that ends up being really cool for reasons like that.
Yeah.
So in that Hulk game,
I'll look out for it, though.
Couldn't you pick up cars and turn them into gauntlets?
Yeah, you could. The Hulk, I don't think he gets enough credit for his wit. He not only picks up two pieces of the car, but then he smashes them together and they become like mitts. I'm thinking, how did you do that?
Actually, I think I remember my favorite thing from that being on the map, there were you go by like a car dealership and there'd be like a big inflatable panda or something on the roof of a building, mm-hmm. and you could pick it up and jump off a building and it acted like a hot air balloon to like sail you down.
It's that kind of stupid stuff. I adore it. Yeah, like I want that in my game. There was also a Superman game, minor off topic, that was on the GameCube. I don't know what it's called.
I don't remember the title, but I had it. That's the Metallo was the main villain of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I have to say that was a Cyborg game Superman for the was. GameCube. It was probably either it had to do with robots, so it was either Cyborg Superman, Brainiac, or Metallo. This game was for the GameCube and
Superman Shadow of Apocalypse.
It looks so dated. Oh, I think Darkseid's in it actually. I think Darkseid's in the game.
It's called, yes, but Cyborg Superman is on the cover.
Oh. This game looked bad. It looked terrible. The cars were polygons. We're talking like N60. It looked like an N64 game on the GameCube. I thought he was on the N64 when he was playing it. But the character models, they had robbers that were dressed up in the classic black and white attire. And I was thinking, what kind of time period are we in right now?
Shall I read? It was made by Atari. Jesus. Shall I read you the plot synopsis?
Yes, very please. Short. Yes, please.
Okay. Believing Intergang to be starting up again, Superman learns that beings causing chaos through Metropolis are, in fact, a group of robots using Intergang's old methods. These Interbots have access to very high-grade weaponry, which is powerful enough to seriously injure or even kill the Man of Steel. These bots are being ordered by a leader that is later revealed to be Lex Luthor, who is secretly working for Darkseid. Finding that the weapons are coming from Apocalypse, Superman sets out to destroy the bots and their weapons, having to fight a multitude of enemies that Luthor sends after him. Parasite, Metallo, and Livewire, contracted to kill Superman to allow the bots free to reign obey Luthor's wishes.
And Cyborg Superman's on the cover?
No, that's Metallo.
Oh, okay.
Now that
I was going to say, let's switch that up.
Yeah, no, that's Metallo. That's Metallo getting punched into the sky.
Give me a game about that again. Give me a game where Superman says, I know who's behind this, and it's the same kind of villain, but they're robots. Just let it happen.
I was more interested in it because I love the setup for those games obviously had to be really quickly, and they established it quick there. All right, we need every enemy in this game to be able to be a poseable threat to Superman.
Oh, for sure.
So they all have kryptonite weapons.
They go, what about Intergang? And they go, no, we need something that will literally can't be bashed into paste. What about robots?
Then someone on a whiteboard just wrote Intergang plus robots.
Plus robots. And what were they calling them? Interbots?
Interbots.
Equals Interbots? And everyone just starts getting up and clapping. The art director shakes his hand. They're just like, beautiful. The car, I encourage everybody to look up a picture of this. The cars are just the most polygonal shaped cars I've ever seen in my life. It's a hilarious game, but
one of my weird memories of that game is for some reason every building had like 30 standpipes and you could go up to the standpipe and rip it off and then Superman would use it like a bat.
I do remember that too. They say Superman's supposed to be this nice guy. He's just ripping things off. I loved it. Avengers, the thing with Avengers is that it looks like it's going to be a very, very serious storyline, which we have seen through Infinity War that can be done. I don't know, every time I see this game I'm just not kind of coerced to play it, and I don't feel
not an Interbot guy.
No, I'm not. I'm more of an Interbot with Superman kind of guy. I'm not really an Avengers type of guy. But I am going to look at reviews for the game. I'm genuinely curious to just see how it goes, because every time this game comes back out of the woodwork for a presentation or a spotlight reveal, it still only whelms me and kind of lowers my expectations each and every time. Yeah, exactly. Every time I see it, I'm just thinking, I'm not a part of the crowd that says this game looks like shit, blah, blah. I just think that it looks, it just doesn't look good.
Like, it's going to be forgettable is what I always think.
Yeah, I have a feeling, 5 years from now, people are going to say, there was an Avengers game for the PlayStation 4? And I'm going to say, it just doesn't look like it. Especially when you have games like Ghost of Tsushima and Last of Us coming out. I don't know, but we'll see. Really quickly, too, Sean Layden, he's a former PlayStation executive. He'd worked for PlayStation Worldwide Studios for Sony Worldwide Studios for like 20 plus years.
He was very much one of the faces of PlayStation for quite a while.
Yeah. you'd be very hard pressed to look up Sony's PlayStation's Worldwide Studios and not see this.
I mean,
guy.
He was no Jack Trenton.
No, he was not. But he recently actually came out and was trying to make a case that, especially with the release of The Last of Us, also with the release of Cyberpunk, Ghost of Tsushima, all these really high-grade AAA games, including even on the development of, say, God of War and other previous games at such a large AAA scale. He believes that in the future, the industry should look at dialing back kind of the scope of what makes a AAA game a AAA game, and should really settle for the 12 to 15 hour experience compared to the 20 to 50 plus hour experience that people are coming to expect from these types of games. And he comes at this from two different points. Number one, from a financial and budgetary point, and also from a crunch and work point. A good way to reduce crunch over time, he believes, is that, you know, you should really, if you lessen the scope or kind of make it smaller, then you're really not going to have to really push yourself to, or kill yourself, for lack of a better word, to make such an output that the
and
last
also-
two had.
More than likely you'll be putting out a more polished product.
Yeah, for sure, because there's just not too much that you have to focus on. And the other, and what kind of comes with that too, is that you could also save money financially with those kinds
of things.
And
cut costs of the games.
Yeah, for sure.
It comes on the heels of, like, me being pretty excited, and I know you are as well, for that Miles Morales Spider-Man game.
For sure.
And I think I might have mentioned this last week, but, like, I keep coming back to the thought of, like, looking at, like, Uncharted Lost Legacy, and I always think to myself, like, I would rather have a game the scope of an Uncharted Lost Legacy every year and a half, 2 years, than an Uncharted 4 every 3 or 4.
For sure. And what if, also, it's something to be said, what if it's just not a great game story-wise? And that's always going to be the case for any game that comes out, but are you really going to want to drag yourself to play 30 to 40 hours of a game that's very narrative-driven, that just drags a little bit, and you're kind of just waiting for it to be over at that point. So when you think about all the gaming experiences that you have, that you've had, like, one of your favorite games, or it's just Persona, and this is a game that's tens of hours long. It's over 100 hours long if you want it to be.
Yeah.
Yet it's still something that's incredibly memorable to you. You've had a great time. You've beaten it twice, or at least you've beaten several titles in that suite of games. And you've never shown any signs of slowing down. So there's an argument to be made there that it really just depends on the quality of the game, of what type of game is being made. But at the same time, do you really want to subject yourself to feeling almost forced to just play through these big titles and just feel like you have to slog through it? And I know I felt that in the past, too. You're just getting to this certain point where you just don't want to play anymore. And you're just like, kind of over it. So I don't know. I thought it was an interesting point, and I was thinking that the industry could use more 12 to 15 hour gaming experiences. I was just thinking that The Last of Us is a 15 hour gaming experience. And that's regarded as one of the best games of all time. So I don't think that quantity of time is going to equate to a quality of product, but I think that there has to be this medium. Yeah, exactly. There has to be, like, this medium that you could settle for having a smaller scope, but just as big of an impact as anything else. I mean, even think of, but again, it all depends on the studio that's doing it, which is why I think he focused on the word AAA, because you even think of games that were highly acclaimed, like Journey. And if you read up on Journey, or even watch some of the behind the scenes, that studio was on the verge of collapsing, like, several different times. And they were financially strained. And when you think about the end product, we're talking about a product that's only a few hours long, but has received universal praise just for how unique it was. So I think that's why he's trying to really shift this towards a AAA industry that just has the resources to make these kinds of things and potentially even churn out more higher quality products. So who knows?
Yeah, totally.
I don't know. Who's to say? That being said, I really do got to play Lost Legacy, or just Uncharted's kind of next on my list when I'm done with The Last of Us.
People keep saying
Lost Legacy is incredible.
It's so good.
And
so good.
That blows my mind. That makes me hype, and I actually do like games like the upcoming Miles Morales game to be a $40 title. I'm pretty hyped
for
that.
You know what I should also tell you is going to sell you on Lost Legacy, me knowing you personally, the quote-unquote treasure you're after in Lost Legacy.
Don't tell me it's treasure.
It's Ganesh, baby.
Oh, okay. Well, now I'm in.
You're after his Ganesh. You climb a giant Ganesh statue at one point.
I love it. I love the hit. It's just so cool. I don't know. I think that because I was thinking about the gaming experiences that I've had over the times, and when you're thinking about, say, like a game like Animal Crossing, I think obviously there's something to be said about those types of games that you're supposed to pool in hours towards, and there's just kind of a goal. The goal is really what you want to make it. Technically, you could stop Animal Crossing when, I don't know, the credits roll, which does happen.
Animal Crossing is getting another update. Did we not mention that?
Oh, no. Oh, good point. Yeah. Beachy
July,
update thing.
July 3rd, it's getting diving, which is another one of those things people were like, why'd they remove this? It was in New Leaf, which my answer consistently being what they seem to be proving, which is because they're going to slowly keep giving you more stuff.
Yeah, it's a game that's going to give you drip of content as they create it. I mean, I think that's the real... That's why I even think Pokemon... It's pretty damn good for what it's going to be. They could just keep enhancing it.
Enhance.
That's it. Yeah, enhance and make it go deeper. So, I don't know. I'm actually really curious to see how games are going to be created from a AAA lens in the future. Just because I'm noticing an increased scrutiny in studios that are really churning out these products like Cyberpunk or Last of Us or God of War's. Because there's so much sacrifice that has to be done to make it into these games. And you're just thinking, was it really worth it all at the end of the day? You know, really, was it worth the creation? Or could you have at least created this smaller scope of game and still be just as memorable? You know, there's both sides of an argument that could be made. Did you ever see the Raising Kratos documentary? Can you hear me? Okay. Okay, well, I'll take this too, and I'll just I'll carry it for a second. But there's the Raising Kratos documentary that there's a portion in this documentary where, I'm forgetting the two women that were a part of the studio who were talking about this, but the interviewer essentially asks, you know, what did you have to sacrifice to get to this point? You know, what did you have to sacrifice to create this game? And there's just such a long silence between the two of these women who had worked on this game, and it speaks volumes, because they are speechless for maybe about a minute. They look at each other, they kind of nervously laugh about it for a moment because they both know, and even as an outsider who is not a part of the development industry at all, you can pick up that the answer was pretty much a lot. And they would even go on to say, well, listen, in this industry you have to really, you know, if you have a solid support system like your family and your friends, then you are truly fortunate, because I can only imagine how much you have to sacrifice to get to that point. And when you're thinking about God of War, you're not really thinking about the, you know, what it took to get there. You're more so just thinking about, oh, this is a great game, and this is something that I'm going to remember for the rest of my life. And you could argue that that's why developers do that. They try to work their hardest to make sure they create those memorable experiences for you. So, this was just a topic that I'm just very curious to see in time, especially from the titans of the industry, to just see what they create. I'm really hyped for Miles Morales. I do wish that he was in his own numbered title. But that being said, it's still something I'm excited to kind of look into. Rich also had to attend to something outside of the room, so I'm kind of one man showing this, so that's fine. So if you'll bear with me for a little bit longer, we'll talk. Other than that, Ghost of Tsushima is coming out in July. That's something that I'm really looking forward to. It just looks like a really excellent game. That game graphically also just looks incredible. Which is why I'm trying not to compare apples to oranges here, because every time I look at a game like Ghost of Tsushima, or Last of Us, or any other game that had released this year, I'm trying to look like, I don't know, I don't want to use Persona as an example, but these games all look great. Final Fantasy, that's what I was thinking of. These games have all looked great, and then I'm comparing it to looking at the Avengers, and I'm just a little deflated, because I think in the graphical department, it looks okay, but it wouldn't be something where I would say, hey, you know, this is definitely going to be one of the last types of games on the PlayStation 4 that'll really showcase some of its capabilities. It kind of just looks a little half-baked, so I guess we'll see how that fares. And I guess on the other things on the agenda, I have recently been playing Marvel's Ultimate Alliance 3. I didn't talk about it earlier because I guess it didn't really matter to me at the time. I was just like, yeah, I'm just playing it. We made an episode a few months. Oh, gosh. I think if this is our 50th. We made an episode months back where when it was coming out, I was even bashing it. Actually, I was judging it. I wouldn't say bashing it. I never said the game was going to be crap. But it didn't look that great to me. It kind of had this cartoony-ish style to it, which you can argue is a game that should be like a comic book. But the more I play of it right now, because I'm almost kind of done with it, which can only serve as a testament to how slow I play games, the more I really enjoy it. That studio really came out and made the game a fully fleshed out superhero fighting game that's worthy of Ultimate Alliance. I'm definitely going to take back what I had initially assumed when it was first coming out, because there's so much downloadable content there that is both paid and free, where you just have a complete plethora of different heroes to pick from, and it's awesome. Like, recently I just got Ghost Rider, and I wasn't expecting to see Ghost Rider in this game at all, and it was just awesome, because now I can just play as Ghost Rider with Nightcrawler and Wolverine and Cyclops, and it also made me realize how much I miss the X-Men compared to their 90s counterparts, because nowadays when you're getting the films like Days of Future Past or the never-to-be-released but one-day-will-be-released New Mutants, there's definitely kind of this modernized look to them that you kind of are left with a yearning for the 90s X-Men or the more classic ones. So it kind of makes me miss them whenever I play games like those. Even in the Avengers, I was hoping that while I knew that this was going to kind of take spiritual succession from the... While I was going to take reference from the cinematic universes with the roster, I kind of was hoping to see an X-Men, just because Wolverine is even one of the Avengers for quite some time. But that's also why Rich and I are kind of glad to see Miss Marvel, because she's just kind of a different character in the roster itself. But overall, yeah, PlayStation is looking pretty fucking good in terms of its offering. And I do hope that in time, when this does get shifted over to the PS5, I do really hope that they allow the majority of the past 100 games or so to be backwards compatible. Because there are some games that I still have not beaten. One of them being, say, like Horizon Zero Dawn. Or I'm still trying to chug my way through Persona because it's just a chunky boy of a game. So we'll see. And as for the Xbox or any other consoles, I have no fucking clue. I don't know what's going on with those, and I can only hope they're good. So, I guess I hope you enjoyed my whole spiel of a spiel. I guess what else can I think of for anything? I'm going to be replaying Sekiro. I'm actually going to be streaming too, more often than not nowadays, just because I realized, I think, that the reason why I wasn't streaming in the past was just because I was thinking of streaming as something that would be a means to an end. For example, I really wanted Rich and I to kind of take a more critical view of how we would, or critical expectation as to what we want to make of, say, this podcast, or even just what we'd want to make of Gecko Games in general, especially with Rich being a part of StoryChomp now. I definitely wanted to do things that would propel him in his endeavors there, but also enjoy himself for what we are doing, because what we're doing right now is just small scale. It's just for us and for you guys as listeners, and that's why we really appreciate you folks, even if you're listening. I know we have family and friends that listen to us, and they even message us later, and they say, yeah, well, it wasn't actually that bad, and here's some feedback, which I'll always endlessly appreciate. But there's always a question of, you know, what do we ever want to do for this as a side project, even, or a side hustle? And the goal really truly wasn't to make money off of doing this. We truly just enjoy the industry and the medium. I have interest in game development. I know Rich really loves and enjoys the PR and journalism aspects of the industry and media. So I've always just tried to kind of account for both of those. But one of the things that we kept coming back to was streaming. And this is something we have arm wrestled with each other over time and again, because it all comes down to just schedule and work ethic as to how often we can do it. Because the one thing that I think I've learned when it comes to streaming services or Twitch is that you were being presented with an oversaturated market, and it's very hard to kind of put the spotlight on yourself and put yourself out there when there are millions of others that are like you as well. So it really came into the question, what do we want Gecko Games to be, or even just what we're doing? Oh, Rich is back. And the answer is that, yo, Rich, what it's happened? Totally up to you as to whether or not you want to edit the last 20 minutes or not, because I just go off. But I was at this point, Eric. I ran out of things to say about games, so I was talking about what we want to do with Gecko Games in terms of streaming and how Twitch is an oversaturated market and just...
Wow.
I know. Rich, I kind of just went off. I didn't know where to go.
I'm going to have to listen to it. Sorry about that.
No, don't apologize. What? I hope everything's okay.
No, everything's fine.
I was just telling the audience, or probably myself, I don't know. You know what? I'm going to leave this up to your discretion for while you're going with this. I give you free reign. Cut whatever the fuck you want.
I'll take a look. See what we got.
Oh, God. No, but I was just saying that after this, I'm planning to stream more. I was actually going to stream later today because the number one thing that you and I have always kind of armed wrestled with each other about is, like, when are we going to stream anything? We always want to stream with the best intentions, but it never really comes because they're scheduling and also it's a lot.
Yeah, it's hard to put things together.
Yeah, and I was like, you know, I was like, in terms of streaming, it's something that I know we even want to do, and then COVID hit, so we're like, oh, fuck, we can't do Dino Crisis right now. So there's just a lot of it that we want to do and that we have that tries to align with our interests. But Twitch is such a – the streaming market's so oversaturated that we just do it for fun, and we just see what's going to happen out of it, and we don't expect anything from it.
Exactly. But we'll I think we will definitely get there. It's just it's tough.
I know. It's a tough one. And streaming in general is just, you got to make a commitment towards it. So I know you have your Sword Chomp streams too. So it's like, imagine if I'm like, hey, Rich, while I'm on your stream, can you do the stream about the stream while the stream and then also do the stream? It's like there's too much of it over that time.
It's so much scheduling.
Yeah, for sure.
We'll figure it out.
I'm at the mental end of my rope. I'm not going to lie to you. Do you have anything else that you want to talk about?
Not really. I could move us right into housekeeping if that's what you want to do.
Oh, please do. I just realized I probably just sound like I sounded insane. Just take us away.
Okay. thanks to Ed for our intro. Thanks to Heather Ramos for our wonderful, wonderful podcast artwork. Thanks, Eric, for hanging out. Ask us questions. GeckoGamesPodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up on Twitter. You can find me at TheRichMeister0, and you can find Eric at Beautiful_Eric. Until next time, it's been our pleasure to hang out with you. It's really hot, Eric. Let's get the hell out of here.
Thank you, Rich. Goodbye, everybody.